So the medical community has determined that there is this one contributing factor to a couple of really, really serious health concerns that I think you need to be concerned about, I need to be concerned about. When I looked at them, though, I think all of us have a tendency to do this. You're going to think as if these things don't apply to you because you're young, you have your life in front of you, most of you are incredibly healthy, many of you still have six-packs. What are those? So you're doing really, really well. But when you see things like Alzheimer's disease, when you look at obesity, diabetes, high blood pressure, heart disease, neurodegenerative diseases, and cancer, most of us in this room have a tendency to think that those are old people things. Here's what's interesting. The medical community has determined that there is one contributing factor, probably more than any other contributing factor, with all of these diseases. It's loneliness. Loneliness. And before you want to check out, college student, before you want to check out, young adult, because here's what you're thinking. You came to Overflow tonight, and when you're with friends, so you're thinking, I'm not really lonely. Maybe you're really, really fortunate. You're with a boyfriend or girlfriend. And I just want to say, and on behalf of all the other single people, we hate you, but we're glad you're here. But you may think, no, I'm not lonely because I have him, I have her, look at him, and he's so funny, he blows my mind. Hey, Mickey, you know, he's that guy. Or, you know, your girl's so hot, she makes your teeth sweat when you look at her. Whatever the case, you may think that you're not lonely, but it's been proven medically. In fact, there is some research that shows that emotional isolation is ranked as high a risk factor for mortality as smoking. That loneliness is that powerful. Frieda Reichmann, a German psychiatrist, said this, that loneliness is the want of intimacy. Now, let me caution you, college student, young adult. As soon as we say the word intimacy in America in 2018, there are a lot of you in this room, your immediate tendency is to sexualize this idea. Intimacy here isn't in the sexual context. Intimacy is that guy or that girl in this room, and I would propose that it's all of us here, whether you know this, believe this or not. Intimacy is this desire inside of every single human being to be completely known and to know someone else fully, completely, without any fear of rejection. And isn't it interesting? How many of you are sitting there and you've already convinced yourself how easy it is for me standing here to quickly convince myself that I am not lonely. But aren't there some things about you that nobody else knows? And isn't there this longing inside of you for someone to know you completely and you not fear being rejected? Isn't that the reason why there are young men within the sound of my voice, and here's what you do, whether it's with your boys, or it's with a young lady, that you get to a certain point and you are the master at sabotaging relationships? Even simple friendships. But when it gets too real and people get too close and someone asks hard questions, you're out. And sometimes you disguise it. You're the consummate smart aleck, or you're incredibly sarcastic, and you present yourself as unbelievably silly, but it's a defense mechanism because someone's way too close, and if they know who you really are, they may reject you. And ladies, isn't that the reason why when you look in the mirror every single morning, you lie to yourself? You tell yourself stories that aren't true. The person that speaks to you more than anybody else, heads up, ladies, is you. You talk to yourself more than anybody else. And part of the reason why you're so convinced that you can never be enough for a group of friends, for those sorority sisters, for the, you know, your roommates, for your peers, your teammates, wherever you are, is you have convinced yourself that if somebody knows who I really am, what I really think, what I really want, what I really hate, what I really love, how I really feel, the shame and guilt that I have, my past, who I've been with, what I think about, the times I've gotten really, really close to wanting to end it all, you feel like they would reject you. See, I think that a German psychiatrist is more right than we want her to be. Loneliness is a part of all of us in this room. It is our story. We sit here surrounded by so many people, and there are young men and young women, you are incredibly lonely. The English poet, English American poet W.H. Auden said this, that we must love one another, we must love one another or die. We must love one another or die. That the toughest of us in this room who's decided that your outer shell will be impassable and nobody will ever be able to get to the core of who you are, for you, there is some sort of emotional, and yes, where we go tonight, some sort of deep spiritual death for those of us in this room that have decided, I am locked up, I am locked down, I will not love. And here's what makes that incredibly difficult in 2018 for you as a young adult, as a college student. For those of you that care, the data and experts all around the world are saying this about your generation, that you are the loneliest generation that has ever walked the planet, and especially in America. The data that shows that sexual activity, drug and alcohol abuse is plummeting, that depression, loneliness, and suicide is at an all-time high. Just this past month, three times, I've had to counsel college students who are on the verge of deciding, I don't want existence anymore, because they're tired of being lonely. And part of the contributing factor to your loneliness is that you live in this Wi-Fi enabled world. You, Generation Z, have a digital heartbeat. And because you have a digital heartbeat, and because so much of our world revolves around social media, and this is not at all, you know, some attempt to poo-poo on the idea of social media. If you've got, you know, Twitter and Instagram and whatever else you've got, Snapchat, and maybe you're inventing things like Bookface, whatever you've got, totally down, totally cool. But here's the problem. You having a digital heartbeat means this, that there are young men and young ladies who appear unbelievably secure, but you live in a constant state of comparison and anxiety, because you've developed the habit of comparing everybody else's highlight film to your behind the scenes. When you look at pictures, you think about what you tell yourself when you look in the mirror. And that digital heartbeat that leads you to a place of constant anxiety and comparison is part of the reason why you find yourself in the place where you are tonight, relationally, spiritually. I find it interesting that UCLA Medical Center several years ago did a study, and here's what they said about this idea of loneliness. They came up with some markers. I think you'll find this interesting, at least I do. They talked about the difficulties of passing as someone else. You ever find yourself as a young adult trying to do that, whether it's social media or who you are in the halls of your respective university or college or where you work, that you find yourself constantly trying to paint a picture and to be and feel and look like someone completely, you know, unbelievable, never a problem. You're always feeling this pressure of passing as someone else. You hide behind a false identity. It's why a lot of us, you came in here tonight, and here's the reality of your life, that the, you know, proverbial dookie has hit the fan today, but you've come to overflow. And so you've got to put up a front, and you can't, you know, express your hurt. You can't show your pain. You're with friends who expect you to be the life of the party. They've gotten on to you before when you've kind of dipped into that depressive state. And so you're constantly feeling like I have to hide behind this false identity that everything's great. And yay, God, spirit sprinkles, you're always doing that. Some of us, you police every piece of information known about you. Girls, have you ever asked a friend to take down a picture that they posted of you because you didn't look good in it? Is that the giggle of conviction? What is that? Here's another question. How long have you spent editing pictures that you took of yourself that you wanted to post to make sure that every angle looked good and your butt was just right and, you know, that's just the guys. You know, all that you do to make sure, because you want to make sure that every piece of it, because, right, your generation is so good at this. You are branding yourself. And so you have to constantly think about how you're portrayed in culture. You live in this constant terror of exposure or blackmail. Some of us in this room, you are so worried of what might come out one day because of what's been exchanged and what's been passed, whether a picture, a text, a conversation. And lastly, UCLA talked about how you impose sharp limits on your friendships, that there are some people that you just can't roll with. There's some people you just can't be close to. There's some people that you can't connect with. You can't show your emotion. You can't be intimate, for a lack of a better term. In fact, UCLA posed it this way, that when you live with this constant filter in your life, it's like you're walking around with a constant ticking time bomb. And what I find interesting as I was talking about that is that most of us in this room, you made this assumption because of how those fragments or segments of statements were made. You've made the assumption that I'm talking about social media. You've made the assumption that I am talking about this constant state of, you know, expression where you've got to constantly compare who you are and you're living in this anxiety because what does somebody else think and how am I being portrayed and what is my brand? What's interesting is the study that I just talked about that UCLA did was done in the 80s before social media was even a phenomenon. And they weren't talking about digital expressions or communication. They were talking about men and women who had contracted the AIDS virus. In fact, they were talking about David Kirby specifically, the first person to die of AIDS and allow himself and his photograph to be shown as he was dying of that disease. And here's why I share that. Because here's what's been connected by people that are so much smarter than all of us in this room. The social experience that UCLA said this, the social experience that most reliably predicted whether an HIV-positive gay man would die quickly was whether or not he was in the closet. In other words, how lonely was he? Did anybody know? And I think it speaks volumes to us tonight. Because college student, young adults, God did not design you. God did not design me to be alone. You have not been created. You have not been wired. You have not been made to walk through life lonely. And this is what I think, because I've walked around tonight. I've just wanted to get a hint of what's happening here. The greatest danger to your generation and mine, the greatest danger to so many of you in this room, this dream and future you have for an unbelievable future, is this reality. Your greatest danger, my greatest danger, is our self-sufficiency. Because for a lot of us in this room, this is what you've decided, that you don't need anybody else, that for you to be completely vulnerable, for you to be completely transparent, for you to be intimate emotionally and spiritually with a friend or a group of friends means trouble for you because you're going to get rejected. And so you've decided spiritually and emotionally, you're just going to stay in the closet. And here's my plea to you tonight. To that young man or that young lady, whether it's shame, it's guilt, you just want to talk to somebody, you just need to be open and honest with somebody, you just need to share your heart with someone, you have dreams, you have aspirations. On election day, can we just be honest, you have fears. Would you be willing to live as you were designed to live and come out of the closet? To which some of you in this room, this is what you've decided to say. Your whole thing is, well, bro, my relationship with God is unbelievably personal, and it's nobody's business what shame and guilt I'm dealing with. It's nobody's business what my fears are. It's nobody's business what my past is. That's what Jesus is for. That's why I come to Overflow, to throw my hands up in the air and wave them like I just don't care, because I'm going to worship him, and then it'll eventually go away. Let me say this loud and clear, and you can debate this and argue about this when you leave, or you can have this discussion with me later. Your relationship with God, college student, is personal. It's very, very personal, but it's not private. Your relationship with God is personal, but it's not private. And for that guy or girl who sits here tonight and this is what you've determined, I am just going to keep my deal, my deal. My fear for you is that you're missing this unbelievable gift that happens when one person, two people, three people, four people decide, I'm going to love you enough to be me. I'm going to decide that I'm going to show you myself. There's this Jewish philosopher that I read. I love this guy. He said this about this idea of being known, that the ultimate moral imperative is the face of another. The ultimate moral imperative is the face of the other. In other words, you and I can decide to hide behind worship. I mean, this is a great example tonight. We've got smoke blowing in the room. You don't have to be seen. We can dim the lights really low. And you could literally walk out of here tonight and no one know you. But the ultimate moral imperative is when someone you get face to face and they know you and you know them back. They know you and they understand you and they still love you. In fact, this Jewish philosopher goes another step. He said that the face of the other creates a moral demand on our heart that is far more compelling than the Ten Commandments. Isn't this true for those of you that have that kind of friend, that have that kind of relationship? That it is the relationship that calls you to be more in Jesus than just these imperatives that we think the Bible forces on us. It's the relationship you have with that friend that is calling more out of you, that knows the junk that's in your life, that knows what your past is, and they still love you in light of who you are. They love you despite who you are. It's the friendship. It's the relationship. And before you think, you know what? Maybe I'm not as spiritual as I should be because this scares the living daylights out of me for me to be that authentic, vulnerable, and open. And I can tell some of you, especially guys, you're crossing your arms, you're like, bro, there ain't no way. I'm not talking to anybody about my deepest, darkest fears. I've never talked to anyone. My father didn't raise me that way. That's not what men do. We're not ushy. We're not gushy. Maybe one day when I talk to when I meet my wife, I'll say, yeah, that hurts. But that's as far as I'm going to go. And you'll be single for a long time. But maybe some of you, you're going, that's way, way hard. Well, here's what's incredible. I don't find it coincidence And some of us should consider this, that when you look at Matthew's account of the life of Jesus, Peter telling Mark, this is what you should know about my time with Jesus, Luke talking to eyewitnesses and talking about what they experienced with Jesus, and John's eyewitness account of his life with Jesus, does anybody else find it interesting that Jesus was constantly standing up in front of crowds and then retreating and going and getting face to face with 11 or 12 people? See, I'm of the opinion, we've got it reversed in the church for some reason. We think this is the deal. No, this is just a setup for you to get face to face with someone. And Jesus modeled that for us. And here's how I know it was a hard, hard thing even then. This is what Jesus said to those who followed him the closest after he had had a conversation in front of a bunch of people. They gather together and Jesus tells his closest followers this, watch yourselves. In other words, pay careful attention to what you're doing, what you're saying, who you're with. Pay careful attention to your motives. Pay careful attention to your intentions. Pay careful attention to what's going on here. Watch yourselves. And if your brother sins, rebuke him. Let me help you with this. If you have a friend that's stepping in some stuff that they don't need to step in, call them on it in love. But tell them what's up. Have that kind of conversation with them. Rebuke him. And if he repents, in other words, if he goes, you know what, you're right, I shouldn't do that, forgive him. And you know what they came back and said is, okay, now how often should we do that? Jesus had an answer for them. If he sins against you 7 times in a day and 7 times comes back to you and says, I repent, forgive him. Now here's where most of us are hung up on the conversation between Jesus and those that were following him the closest. Jesus is recommending, suggesting, and in some regard demanding that they look into the face of the other and tell each other the truth in love. And how did his disciples respond to this? When Jesus says, this is the standard in relationships. This is what it means to be face to face with each other. They came back and said, increase our faith. In other words, no, bro, we ain't gonna do that. You're gonna have to help me believe a little more. In other words, it's exactly what some of you are saying when you leave tonight. I can't do that. I can't be that honest. And some of the reason why you can't be that honest is because of the people that you have surrounded yourself with and who surrounds you. Can I give you a bit of advice as someone that's a little farther down the road, but has been a young adult, a college student at some point? College students, young adults, if you're not losing friends, you're not growing up. If you're not losing friends, you're not growing up. Something has stunted your growth spiritually, relationally, emotionally. If you've decided, I just cannot break, because some of us, this is what you know. You've surrounded yourself with people and they're never going to be that kind of friend to you. And it's okay to have those kind of people in your life, but who is it that you know loves you unconditionally so much so that you can be you? And does anybody else find it incredibly insightful that John, the one that Jesus said loves me and I love him, John, in his letter, in his first letter, says this. He says, dear friends, let us continue to love one another. I love the fact that the implication that John gives is that for those of us who claim to be followers of Jesus, you're a Jesus person, that this should be a continuation. In other words, this should be a part of your spiritual, emotional, relational DNA. Let us continue to love one another, for love comes from God. Let me push a little bit. you sit here tonight and you claim to have a relationship with Jesus, but you are not seeking to love another person the way they deserve to be loved and the way that person deserves to be loved. I'm not talking about eros love. I'm talking about you being in a friendship where you are known completely and you completely know without any fear of rejection. Love comes from God. And so if you sit here tonight and you claim to be someone who has a relationship with Jesus, but you're not loving friends this way, could it be that you've missed something? Could it be that you need to ask yourself some difficult questions? He says this in verse 7. In verse 8, he goes, but anyone who does not love does not know God. If you do not love, he says, you do not know God, for God is love. In other words, the essence of God is love. It's who he is. It is this ability for you and I to know each other and to be completely known without any fear of rejection. He goes on. He says, dear friends, since God loved us that much, we surely ought to love each other. And how much did God love you? He was willing to lay his life down for you. And I love this part. He says, no one has ever seen God, but if we love each other, God lives in us and his love is brought to full expression in us. Here's the reason why I think that's important. Because in chapter 1 of 1 John, John shows us and says this in essence, that college student, young adult, you and I cannot fall in love with abstractions. It is difficult for anybody in this room, yay, impossible for you to fall in love with this abstract concept or construct of who God is. So what does God do in his wisdom? He gives you and I the capacity to love each other. And if you and I, who have never seen God, this is so crazy. No one has ever seen God, but if we love each other, here's in essence what he's saying. Your love for God is authenticated. Your love for God is demonstrated by your love for each other. You begin to understand what this is about when you start loving each other this way. When you start becoming the full expression of love. He says, we love each other. Because he first loved us. We love each other because God first loved us. And this next part is the one that rattles me more than any. If we don't love people, we can see. How in the world can we say that we love God who we can't? How in the world can we sit here tonight and declare that we are passionately in love with this creator of the universe when we refuse to love each other the way we've been created to love? I just gotta be honest with you guys. This is hard for me. And part of the reason why I think it's hard for all of us is if you think about it, especially as a college student, as a young adult, most of us in this room, you didn't walk around and choose the friends that you have. In fact, I don't know if you care about this, but there are some scientists that believe that the only reason why we have a moon that is a part of the orbit of the Earth is because there was this rock flying through the universe that just happened to get stuck in our orbit, and now it cannot get out. It literally is the equivalent of this rock just speeding along and all of a sudden gravity takes it and it just starts going in a circle. And I think that is a perfect example of why some of us have the friends that we have. You didn't choose them. You're not even sure where they came from. In fact, some of you, this is scary. You're looking at each other going, that's you. You are like this rock that was flying through my world and you got stuck in my orbit and I can't get you out. And you've tried to make them mad and they just will not leave. And you're giggling because you know it's true. There are guys listening to me right now and if you were to be honest, you're like, dog, I ain't got no idea how we're together. But thank you for being, you get it. And for those of you that care to take the science to a whole nother level, for those of you that care, it is because of the moon that our Earth sits at a 23.5 degree angle. 60% of that gravitational pull comes from the moon. 40%, interestingly enough, comes from the sun. So our Earth is at a constant tilt. In fact, when I count to three, everybody just do this with your head. One, two, three. One more time. One, two, three. I just heard somebody say, ow. And I think it was because y'all went, bam, that wasn't good. But the reason why I want you to think about that is, who is it that's in your circle that flew into your orbit that cannot get out? Here's a question for you. Do those people tilt you toward God? Because you've got a tilt. There is a moon friend in your orbit. Do they tilt you toward God? Does anybody know what your kryptonite is while you're so busy wearing that cape that you wear? And because they tilt you toward God, they know it and they love you despite it. Do they tilt you toward God, the people that are in your life? Do they tilt you toward hope? Are you more hopeful because of the guys and girls, the friends that you have in your life? Or do you feel despair creep up on you? Do the friends in your life tilt you toward more regrets or less? Because here's a heads up, as someone who has three children, there is going to be a day when your children are going to ask you about your friends. And the question you've got to answer, and I know you're not thinking about it now, there are guys going, bro, I can't even get a date, right? But there is going to be a time when your children are going to ask you questions about your friends, and you're going to have to make a decision. And this is such a crazy decision for you to think about now, but it's going to happen. You will either lie or tell them the truth. Are many, if not most, of the regrets that you have in your life because of the people that have flown into your orbit? Or are they tilting you toward a life of absolutely no regrets and a better future? Let me push a little bit more. Are you better together or apart? Isn't it interesting how you spend some time away from some of your friends and your life seems to calm down and you like take this deep breath and everything's cool, and then they fly back into the orbit and all of a sudden there's mass chaos? Are you better together or apart? And with all of that, if that's the way that you're tilted, if that's who you are you mature enough to understand that if you're not losing friends, you're not growing up? If you can't talk about this love relationship with the creator of the universe that you say is so important to you, because watch this. Here's what true, real friends are like. They are like a mirror. Everybody in this room needs someone that when you look at them, they are mirroring you back to you. Do you know what's interesting to me about a mirror? When you look in a mirror, it doesn't change your appearance. It shows you the good things about yourself, and it shows you the bad things about yourself. But it stays and keeps showing you the picture. Do you have friends in your life that are that kind of mirror? If you don't think mirroring is an important thing, scientists have proven that when a child looks at their parent, there are these things they call mirror neurons that begin to develop in a child's mind so that when they see their parent's face, it's what's going to happen when you go home for the first time this semester at Thanksgiving. And you see your mom, usually not your dad, you see your mom. And isn't it crazy what happens in your brain when you see your mom? It's because there's this chemical thing that even happens with people who know that person loves me despite me. Do you have a friend like that? Do you know anybody like that? We need at least one person. That's our mirror. And some of you, this is your homework tonight. It's not enough for you to come in here and throw your hands up and declare your allegiance and passion to Jesus. Your homework is to go ask yourself and your friends some hard questions. Your homework is to have those kind of difficult conversations. If you want to go fast, Ricky Bobby, go alone. If you want to go fast, go alone. But if you want to go far, you got to go with somebody. You got to go together. And I wonder if some of us teeter because you're not being mirrored by anybody. And I'm going to leave you with this, and this is my own way of working it out. And so if you're not a basketball fan, please excuse this, but I'm going to speak to those of us that are. Can I tell you what I think about when I think about a lot of us in this room? I think there are some of us in this room, you are an all-star freak of a person. Spiritually, you've got all the goods. You are strong. You are smart. You're really, really good looking. You've got unbelievable aspirations. You're going to make somebody an incredible husband or wife. You would make somebody an unbelievable friend. But here's the problem. You've put yourself in an orbit with people that are not helping you at all. Kind of like, next picture, this guy last year. Can we all just agree that every guy in this room would love to have that body? Every guy in this room would love to have his skill. Everybody in this room would love to have his money. But did anybody else find it interesting that he had a very difficult time being effective and succeeding in his chosen profession because of people he had surrounded himself with? For those of you that don't know, this idiot right here got a rebound under the basket. He could have laid it up. They win the first game, and it probably changes the series. But what does he do? He dribbles it out to half court because he's unaware. And when LeBron looked at him and said, "Dude, what are you doing?" He was like, right? He didn't know. And does anybody else find it interesting that here's what LeBron James, perhaps, arguably, not my opinion, it's not my personal opinion, but arguably the greatest basketball player of all time, again, not my opinion, so don't get out of place. But now, here's what he's done because of that experience, in my opinion. He's decided, I'll just change teams. And I don't know if you guys know this, but it's same song, second verse now. He's just put other idiots in his universe, in his orbit. And then you have, next picture, these guys. This is interesting. Last year, during the NBA Finals, this is the Warriors starting five, but last year, next picture, every single person on this stage played and contributed in some way. One of those guys is a young man by the name of Klay Thompson, who is a free agent at the end of this year and could sign for hundreds of millions of dollars. And here's what he said. I'd rather be on a team that can make an imprint on history. In other words, I'm willing to take a little bit less so that we can be more. I'm willing for it to be hard on me to some degree. I'm willing to put myself second so that my life can make an imprint on history. We've already made an imprint, but it can be even greater. That's what drives me. And here's the reason why I throw this up to you in closing. Some of you in this room, you're a LeBron James of a person, but you don't have anybody around you to mirror your greatness to you and say, this is where you're incredible, this is where you're lacking a little bit, and I love you enough to tell you that, and I want to be here for you to reach your potential. And part of the reason why is that you've decided that love is something different than what God says it is. Because you've decided that this spiritual Jesus love is completely vertical, and John is declaring, and Jesus even told his closest followers, no. If you really want to understand this, you've got to love each other. Because how in the world can you say that you love this God, this abstract entity that you cannot see, and you don't love each other? You won't have hard conversations with each other. College student, young adult, there's somebody sitting in here tonight and they are teetering. They're lonely. And some of them have thousands of followers, but not a soul knows them. Somebody, some of them, are sitting right next to. So Jesus, here's what I ask for us tonight. Would you give somebody in this room an amount of courage that they've never been able to muster? It is a scary thought for us to become more courageous, better. It is a scary thought for us to be vulnerable and authentic. It is a petrifying reality that there is shame, guilt, heartache, a past, abuse, words that have scarred, decisions that we can't get over, relationships that have broken our hearts and we cannot mend it. And you say to us, you are love. And you also declare to us that if you want, you want us to experience the fullest expression of that love through, with, for each other. So I pray, God, for that young man, that young lady who knows that they have decided to stay in the closet way too long. It is time for them to be really, really honest with somebody. I pray that you would give them courage this night to have a difficult conversation with somebody that they know they can trust, who loves them unconditionally. To the guy or girl in this room, they are 20-something years old, and they've never lost any friends, but they need to. And for all of us here who desperately need to be known and to know and to experience your love through the mirror of a friend, because our relationship with you is so deeply personal, but it's not private.